the little frog was happy, happy as he could be. He twinked his toes and he blinked his eyes and he wiggled his tongue with glee. What did the little frog see? Come on now, you tell me.
If the little frog saw cars, he may have been jumping across the highway, because as the old saying goes, when frogs jump across the road, they are looking for rain. Weather folklore, old sayings that ring true or not. It's something we'll talk about as jet streaming takes off for another edition.
I'll tell you what the little frog found with his head in a hole in the ground. He found another little frog.
Hey, it's tough to find music dealing with weather folklore. It's the best we could do. I'm Kathy Werzer, the headmistress of this online school of weather and climatology. It's called Jet Streaming, a podcast created by Minnesota Public Radio. With me, Dr. Mark Seeley from the University of Minnesota, a climatologist and meteorologist, and Craig Edwards makes a return appearance. He, the former head of the Minneapolis-St. Paul National Weather Service Office. Hi, how are you two?
Doing fine this morning. Not a bad summer day.
I couldn't be better myself.
Now, do you two have favorite bits of weather folklore you would like to rely on every so often? Craig, I'll start with you first.
Well, I learned over the years, Kathy, that the one thing that was pretty reliable without looking at a lot of weather information was it was always coldest the second night after a cold front went by. That's because the air, the high pressure was settling right over you and you had the calm winds and the clear skies and typically a snow cover in the winter season. So it's always coldest the second night after a cold front goes by.
Okay, pretty accurate. All right, well, Mark?
I like the imagery conjured up by mare's tails and mackerel scales make tall ships take in their sails, which refers to the high cirrocumulus clouds, Kathy, that usually precede a storm, and they can give some very unusual patterns in the sky for those cloud watchers.
That's a nice one. I kind of like ring around the moon means rain soon. Did I get that right, Craig?
Yeah, I think you're right on, and that's worked a couple times for us already, Kathy.
I know. Thank goodness. Even a blind squirrel can find an acorn every now and again. Anyway, let's find out more. David Phillips, Environment Canada's senior climatologist, is with us, and Canada's favorite weather guru. He's the guy behind the wildly popular Canadian Weather Trivia Calendar, which, by the way, for 2008, I believe comes out later this summer. David is an author, and he appears regularly on the Weather Channel as host of Ask the Expert, and he appears on the Discovery Channel, too. David, it is a pleasure. Welcome to Jet Streaming.
Well, thank you, Kathy. A delight to be with you. We, and Canadians are favorite people to talk about the weather. They say we're boring because we talk about the weather so much, but I would think that people in Minneapolis and Minnesota and the great Midwest part of the United States are also weather weenies like we are here in Canada.
We are indeed.
Absolutely.
So, David, do you have a favorite bit of weather folklore?
Well, I do. I mean, I love the ones that really have a lot of rhyme to them. When the ditch and pond offend the nose, then look for rain and stormy blows. That's one that I think there's a strand of truth to that. When those ditches and ponds smell a little bit more than one day versus the other, you can be sure that perhaps maybe there's a low pressure system coming in, allowing those putrid smells to leave the ditch and pond, and perhaps that maybe is telling you that a storm is coming your way. But if there's a high pressure area that where there's no weather, then my gosh, maybe it's the pressure is keeping those smells in the pond, and you don't smell them as well as you do. So that's the one I like. But my gosh, there are so many of these pieces of weather lore that have been around for centuries that I find them amusing, and not that I follow them, but I certainly find they're full of merriment and amusement.
Oh, I love the descriptions too. Say, so am I to maybe believe that many of these little bits of folklore may have a strand of accuracy in them?
Well, I think so. I often will play what I call weather charades with young people. I kind of encourage teachers to introduce weather lore when they're in their unit on weather to connect with our ancestors and how, my gosh, 150 years ago there was no weather service in Canada, the United States, and our ancestors and mariners and gatherers and hunters if they one thing they were, Kathy, they were keen observers of the sky. They far better than we are today, because their lives and livelihood often depended upon it. So they sniffed the air and wetted their finger, and they observed the kinds of clouds and the various colors of the skies, and they can often, based just on sheer observation, make some deduction as to the kind of weather that's coming your way. So certainly this is how people forecasted the weather long ago. But I think that what I like to do with young people is to throw out one of these items, like red sky at night, sailor's delight, red sky in the morning, and sailors take warning. I mean, and to look at really the strand of truth that has allowed that to stand the test of time for centuries. I mean, that's a biblical expression. So, my gosh, it's been around here for many, many centuries. So there must be some truth to it. And so what I look behind is the physics and the logic to say, well, gee, what could have, what works here? And not that I would encourage them to use to wake up in the morning and to use that to plan their day, but hey, it's something that makes them just a little bit more observant of their surroundings, and to eke out the kind of truth to it is a lot of fun.
David, having taught here for about 30 years and done a lot of programs with school-age children, I think that it's the weather folklore that sometimes, especially in the elementary ages, really captures their attention and starts to get them to think about nature a little bit and the environment around them. And I agree with you wholeheartedly. Some of these that have stood the test of time, for example, here in our region, we have the long-standing one about dew. When the dew is on the grass, rain will never come to pass. When grass is dry at morning light, look for rain before the night. And during the convective season, during the summer season here in Minnesota, and I suspect across southern Canada as well, this has certainly a degree of truth to it.
Oh, absolutely. And golfers and gardeners, when they'll often remember those little ditties and will plan their day accordingly. And my gosh, it doesn't work all the time, but it works enough times to be believable and useful. So I think you're absolutely right. I think the weather lore that seems to have any strand of truth to it, any hope of being successful, of course, is the weather lore that looks at the next hour or 2 hours or maybe one day. Anything beyond 48 hours is maybe just pure hokum. I mean, there is weather lore that really tries to forecast the season ahead. One of my favorite ones is when the squirrels early start to hoard, winter will pierce you like a sword. I mean, my gosh, these squirrels are gathering nuts and acorns mushrooms, they forget where to put them, and they put them, so they're not giving you any sense at all as to what the weather is going to be. The other one I kind of like too is onion skins very thin, mild winter coming in, onion skins thick and tough, coming winter cold and rough. I mean, it's absurd to think that when you cut open an onion, you see those rings, that it will somehow tell you what the season ahead is going to be. It's probably telling you more about what you've gone through in terms of the growing season, the moisture that was available, and the thermal properties, rather than what the winter ahead is going to be like.
Tell someone from the Climate Prediction Center that would be nice. Craig, do you have a question?
Well, I'd like to jump on board with this, because I'd like to be outrageous enough to suggest that folklore should be taught academically as part of a meteorological curriculum.
What?
Because I've seen meteorologists sit in front of computer screens and not go outside and sniff the air, observe the clouds. When I first started out in the 70s, every hour we went out and observed the weather conditions. Now they sit in front of a computer screen looking at computer models, and I think weather folklore, and if you look at the information that's there and say, now why logically would this make sense? And then I think that one of the challenges ought to be for them to create or make an observation to initiate a new weather folklore term, so that they can say, back in 2007, I was the one that made that observation. Because I was wondering, has weather folklore finished, or are there still opportunities to originate weather folklore?
Hmm.
Well, that's a very interesting. I think that's a great challenge, one that I think would be a lot of fun, both entertaining and. But I think a key to what Craig is saying is that, my gosh, I mean, the very first step in making any forecast is to observe your current conditions. And sometimes I think meteorologists, forecasters are at fault looking at their satellite and radar imagery and not just looking outside and seeing what's cooking. So I think this is in. I think part of the purpose of teaching young people is to, as Mark said, is this notion of observing. I mean, to just observe your surroundings, because it helps us connect with the environment, not just the weather, but the entire environment. And so it's a lot of fun, but also has a good purpose in mind too.
So maybe David, for the Canadian Weather Trivia Calendar, you can ask folks to maybe cook up a new bit of folklore.
Well, you know, it's a good idea. I often put little challenges in there and little quizzes, and that's certainly one. I know that we've in Canada we have most of the folklore that I've seen in North America comes from Europe, and that's why some of it doesn't work, because folklore doesn't always move well from one region to another. My gosh, from one neighborhood to another, it doesn't necessarily hold true. And some of our ancestors, when they came over to the New World, they brought that weather wisdom with them. And my gosh, when they didn't see certain animals or plants that they used in Europe, well, they just conscripted some to use that in place. I think the famous one is the groundhog. I mean, they don't really have groundhogs in Europe. They had marmots and other creatures, but hey, that the groundhog looked like one of these creatures, and the hedgehog, and it became the weather prognosticator, and of course is famous today on Groundhog Day, when people look at these furry friends to find out whether winter is over or whether it will come again. In fact, there is a little piece of folklore that relates to the groundhog. I think if the groundhog, how does it go? If the groundhog day be fair and bright, winter will have another flight. But if the groundhog day brings cold and rain, winter is gone and won't come again. So I think the one thing that I find so entertaining is the rhyme. Now, sometimes our ancestors were more keen on the rhyme than they were on the logic, and they would sort of force something to fit a kind of a clever little couplet, and just threw any hope of science or logic out the window. And sometimes these things are sort of fall down because of that.
Say, David, a quick bit of trivia and then a question for you. The quick bit of trivia is, believe it or not, our state low temperature record here in Minnesota is Groundhog Day 1996, minus 60 up at Tower, Minnesota.
Now, that's in Fahrenheit, is it?
That's in Fahrenheit. Yeah, right.
It's hard for me to get my head around that, but anyways.
That was a Groundhog Day to remember.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. You know, Mark, that's interesting that we have also Groundhog Day's weather events here in Canada. I remember a famous storm in New Brunswick where it happened on Groundhog Day, and people remember what they had for breakfast on that particular morning.
Oh,
they can't remember last week. But my gosh, on a day that is so weather, we have that emotional attachment. We can remember every moment of the day what we did on that day with weather as being the backdrop.
Oh yeah, it's definitely a bookmark. My follow-up question for you, David, having studied this probably more than certainly most people we know, in terms of weather folklore, do you feel like there's more embedded in the cultures of the mid to high latitudes than there is the subtropical latitudes? It seems like where people experience the sharp seasonal changes, you know what I mean, and the great variation in weather, it seems to me there's relatively more weather lore than there is in other places.
I think so. so, Mark. I'm not a great student of it, but I certainly think when I look for the different kinds of weather lore that you find them from really mid-latitudes, also even just conversation. I think the fact that people talk about the weather. I mean, Americans from Maine to Montana talk about the weather, as do Canadians and Europeans. But, my gosh, I go to the tropics, and people think you're boring if you talk about the weather because you could set your watch to the weather. I mean, why would you talk about the weather? I mean, people would say, I'll meet you after the rain, when they just know at 5:45 the rain is going to end or the sea breeze will blow up. I mean, at least our weather is not as monotonous as it is in some of the lower latitudes. And so I think weather is, of course, important to them, but they don't often put these sayings to rhyme. They don't necessarily seem as preoccupied as the fact that, as we are, where, you know, if the weather changes so dramatically, we often say here in Canada, if you don't like the weather out your front door, look out your back door. And because it changes so dramatically, I think that people are more interested in the weather. I think people in Minnesota are more interested in the weather than people in Florida or in Arizona. And in Florida, they're interested, of course, maybe during the hurricane season and in the monsoon season in Arizona, but they often just worry whether the sky is going to be a little bluer from one day to the next, where, you know, the weather can attack you from every direction in where you are and certainly up here in Canada. So I think that certainly drives the interest in it, and also I think it has to our ancestors. And that's why it's really a hotbed of weather lore. Although I find that most in this country, you don't see a lot of original folklore. That's why I like kind of Craig's exercise, where people would come up with a little ditty and put it to rhyme and create something new. A lot of it is very old, and we often, our Aboriginal people often speak in fables or in stories rather than in pithy little weather ditties like we got from Europe. So, but it's certainly alive and well, and I'm happy to see that young people here in Canada often know a little bit about weather lore. I hope it's not just seniors who enjoy these things.
This is Craig Edwards. Before I used to go off to work try to figure out what the probability of rain was going to be for the day, I used to ask my wife how her knees were feeling. But because then I'd get to, if the achiness was up, I'd say, well, the chances of rain is increasing. But now her knees ache every day, so that's not a clue to me anymore. So,
oh, my.
But I've got one for you that says something about a rooster. When the rooster goes crowing to bed, he will rise with a watery head.
Oh, that's a good one. I've actually heard that one, but it's nicely put, and I thank you for reminding me. Here's one that I think is kind of a modern one. You think about, you have your morning coffee, and here's one. If the bubbles rising in your coffee cup, in fair weather you will sup, but if they break and burst apart, rainy weather soon will start. So when you go and you're just staring in your coffee, you could, and those bubbles breaking or not breaking, you might have a sense of what the weather in the next hour or two is going to do.
Craig, I want you to go ahead and try that out tomorrow morning.
Well, you know what? I'm gonna try that. I'm gonna have to leave the lid off my coffee cup though to make sure. I'm gonna try that tomorrow morning, and I'll report back at the show tomorrow
Please
morning.
Please do. Okay. Uh-huh. David Phillips, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Kathy. Thank you, Mark and Craig. Enjoyed our time together.
Very enjoyable.
Bye, guys.
Thank you.
Delightful.
That's David Phillips, Environment Canada's senior climatologist. By the way, Environment Canada's the Canadian equivalent of NOAA. He's also Canada's favorite weather guy. He is behind the Canadian Weather Trivia Calendar. I have to get a hold of one of those, I think.
I've seen one of those. It's a very nice calendar.
All right. We'll be back in just a second.
Sunshine, blue skies, please go away. A girl has found another and gone away. With her went my future. My life is filled with gloom. So day after day, I stay locked up in my room. I know to you, it
night sounds strange, but I wish it would rain.
Oh, there are a lot of people who'd wish it would rain. Extremely dry conditions exist in many parts of the country, and the situation is only getting worse. A few weeks ago, we talked with Brad Rippey, a meteorologist with the USDA, about the dry conditions, and we called him again to get an update. Brad, welcome back.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been more than a month since we last talked.
Well, how's it going?
We have seen one major area of improvement. That's in the lower Mississippi Valley. But we've seen a lot more areas of deterioration. We've seen some really bad conditions in the northern Rockies, the northern plains. And then for you folks, the upper Midwest really seen a lot of deterioration in the last month. The third area that's turned worse is in the mid-Atlantic region.
And when you say taking a turn for the worse, what do you mean by that specifically?
Well, in the last 6 to 8 weeks, we've seen very little rainfall in those three areas I just mentioned. And, of course, the western wildfire situation has been in the news a lot. Already this month, and we're coming to the end of July now, we've seen about 3 1/3 million acres of vegetation burn across the west. Much of that early on was in the Great Basin. That's now shifted up into the interior northwest and the northern Rockies. Meanwhile, Montana, a very, very hot, in fact, a record-setting month for Montana. It's been hotter than the Dust Bowl era. Just looking at a couple of real quick stats from Montana, we've seen a record number of 90-degree days in just most of the major cities. And so for Great Falls, Montana, 19 days of 90-degree heat.
Oof.
And that breaks the 1936 record of 17 days. As we head into the upper Midwest, some areas have only seen 1 to 3 inches of rain since June 1st. That's really taken a toll on corn and soybeans. Looking at the latest numbers from USDA in Minnesota, the corn crop has jumped now to 37% very poor to poor. Soybeans up to 26%. Those are very sharp increases from last week.
Brad, Mark Seeley here. Yes, I concur with everything you've said. I might pass along, and you've probably already seen the data, that as of yesterday, 78% of our soils in Minnesota are short of moisture. And I wanted to ask your opinion. Back on July 19th, the NOAA release on the seasonal drought outlook showed the Great Lakes region in an area that was favored to get some relief through mid-July through October. Do you think that circumstance may change? I know the recent products from CPC seem to hint that the first half of August we might see some more precipitation across our region, but of course, I don't know how widespread that might be.
Yeah, if you look at the very short-term outlooks, you know, going out the week one and week two, of course, the next week or so does not look all that favorable. Week two, there's some hope, I think. Really, high pressure is set up and entrenched over the Midwest right now. It's going to take a while to break that down. You referred to some of the longer outlooks going on out into the latter part of summer and into the autumn. And certainly the drought outlook that came out on July 19th does show some improvement for the upper Midwest. I will point out that we'll see a new outlook coming out later this week. So, you know, folks are going to want to pay attention to the release coming up for August 2nd to see if there is a change in that outlook.
You know, Brad, when you look at your maps, what really jumps out at you here in terms of what you're seeing?
Well, what's remarkable is the patchwork quilt nature of the drought that we've got across the United States right now. Certainly, if you look at the country as a whole, there's a big part of the country, most of it in the western and eastern one-third, just in very general terms. But you see these little pockets that just can't seem to get rain, and they're fairly small areas, and Minnesota, northwestern Iowa, eastern South Dakota is one that's really deteriorated. The other I mentioned before, Montana, Idaho, and the third area here in the nation's capital and surrounding areas, three real pockets that have really deteriorated the last 2 months.
Final question, Craig.
Well, I'm just looking at the CPC outlook for the 6 to 10 day forecasts, and they do favor above normal precipitation as we get through the first 2 weeks of August here. But as I was talking to another meteorologist this morning, above normal precipitation, that could be an inch and a half of precipitation, which makes a dent in the drought but doesn't really give us a recovery. So even though the odds now are going to favor above normal precipitation, that doesn't spell a relief totally to the drought situation that we have here in the upper Midwest.
My question is, I think the
only thing we can do is be a little bit more hopeful that the outlooks are going to be more favorable for precipitation in the upper Midwest.
Right, and certainly, you know, if you get to beyond this high-pressure dome that's over the Midwest now, there is some hope as you get into early August, but you're right, anything that falls is going to go into the crops at this point.
Brad Rippey, another good job. Thanks for the update.
All right, thank you.
Brad's a meteorologist with the USDA. Boy, we've covered a lot of ground on Jet Streaming this week. Before we leave, here is the weather website of the week. Craig, you have the honor.
Well, the folklore will take you through maybe 1 to 2 days, but the CPC, the Climate Prediction Center, will take you out 3 months. So I'm going to recommend the cpc.noaa.gov website, and you can monitor the drought situation. You can also see the long-range outlooks that give maybe some hopefulness that the drought relief is on the way. So cpc.noaa.gov.
And, of course, we'll put the URL of the weather website of the week in the weekly Jet Streaming description, because I know sometimes it's a little tough to jot down the information when you're listening. But do jot this down, minnesotapublicradio.org. Click on Jet Streaming to leave a message for us. And it's been fun hearing from so many people. I'm glad that you're listening out there.
Very, very good program today, too. I hope a lot of people listen to it.
Well, I think Craig's on to something. We're gonna have let's have a little contest. We'll come up with a new bit of folklore.
That's a very good idea.
You got to have a little rhyme to it, you know, from the Europeans.
I know. So you're on that. That's your assignment, Craig.
Okay. Well, I got first of all, see how the bubbles are in my coffee tomorrow.
Right. Mark and Craig, it's been fun. Thanks so much.
Thanks, you.
Kathy.
For producer Julie Seipel, I'm Kathy Worzer. Until next time, remember to keep your eyes on the sky.